Welcome back to God Books, the podcast about books, booksellers, and bookmakers. So today I'll share with you five articles I read this week from the world of books, and then we'll chat to my guest Emily about one of her favorite books this year. Let's get to it. I'd like to start with an article, or rather a blog post, from one of my favorite sources of inspiration, sometimes comfort, Brain Pickings, recently renamed The Marginalian. You may be familiar with Maria Popova's website and newsletter, because it's very, very popular, but if you don't know it, I very much encourage you to go to themarginalian.org. You'll have about, I think, 1,400 articles to catch up with. You can also find and read her book, Figuring, which is definitely one to savor and read slowly, maybe over the holiday season. But for today, the article I read on her blog is actually not one of her most recent ones, but it's one that she resurfaced very recently. And it is called The Greatest Books of All Times, as voted by 125 famous authors. Now, I talked about lists of best books on the podcast before, and it feels like a quest to find some sort of agreement of what these best books of all times are. And obviously, it's all very subjective, but if you are looking for your next read, this all-time classic list may be helpful. Or you can also use it as an exercise to see how many have you read already. So this list actually comes from a book. The book is called The Top 10, Writers Pick Their Favorite Books. And in this book, 125 of modernity's greatest British and American writers, including Norman Mailer, Anne Patchett, Jonathan Franzen, Claire Massoud, Joyce Carol Oates, they were asked to pick their favorites, to provide a list ranked in order of what they consider the 10 greatest works of fiction of all time, novels, story collections, plays, or poems. Then there is a point system in place, so each book on the list gets assigned a score, and these are then added up to get to that final top 10, or rather, to several top 10s. So we have top 10 works of the 20th century, top 10 works of the 19th century, and also top 10 authors by number of books selected. So I invite you to check them all out. Maybe you'll even want to get the book to dig a bit deeper, but for now, let me tell you which books made the top 10 works of the 20th century. Number one, this may or may not surprise you, is Lolita by Nabokov. Then we have The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, In Search of Lost Time by Marcel Proust, Ulysses by James Joyce, followed by Dubliners by James Joyce, then 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, The Sound and the Fury by William Faulkner, To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf, The Complete Stories of Flannery O'Connor, Pale Fire by Vladimir Nabokov, rounding up the list at number 10. So how many have you read? I think I read about 5, to my shame, but maybe I'll try to catch up with the rest soon too. So let's stay with books for a moment, going from best books of the 20th century to new books launched this week. LitHub has a list of 11 books to be grateful for this week, and some of them definitely stood out for me. Mario Vargas Llosa has a new book called Harsh Times. Vargas Llosa has constructed a compelling and propulsive literary thriller, deeply informed by his experience as a public intellectual and a practicing politician, says the book review of The New York Times. Another new book this week comes from Murakami. It's called Murakami Tea, The T-Shirts I Love. It has a very funky cover, which I encourage you to look at. And one of the reviews says, this lively peek into his collection provides some surprising insights into the humble, real Murakami, a playful, witty, nostalgic journey with an acclaimed novelist. I'm looking forward to reading this one. I recently finished a book called Birthday Stories, which is a collection of short stories that Murakami put together, all of them centered around a birthday, and he writes one himself. But in the introduction, or the prologue to this book, you really do see this humble, witty, very down-to-earth person in his narration and in his explanation of why he put together this collection. So yeah, looking forward to reading this one too. And then I also saw on this list a book perhaps suited for the political scientists out there, or anyone interested in the topic, really. It's called Hannah Arendt and Isaiah Berlin, written by Kei Hiruta, and I'll read you one of the reviews from the Wall Street Journal. It says, as Mr. Hiruta, a research fellow at Oxford, shows in Hannah Arendt and Isaiah Berlin, Freedom, Politics, and Humanity, the unexplored relationship between these two giants is fascinating, not just for its simmering acrimony, but because as a pair, they are as much alike as they are antipodes. So you can check the full list of 11 books to see what other new books came out this week and see if anything catches your eye. Now, a bit of good news from the world of bookstores. The first thing I want to tell you is something that makes me really very happy. So in season one of God Books, we had the chance to interview Samir Mansour, a Palestinian bookseller who was left devastated after his bookstore, the largest in Gaza, was reduced to a rubble in an airstrike. You can go back and listen to this episode when you get the chance and hear Samir tell his story of the bookstore, what happened to it, and what his plans were to rebuild it. The Samir Mansour bookstore was 21 years in the making, slowly rising as a much-loved spot for the people of Gaza who found their voice, their refuge, between its shelves. And I think, you know, watching over 100,000 books burned to ashes must have been devastating, but it made Samir more determined to carry on his mission of empowering Palestinians through knowledge. And I am so, so glad to have read this week that Samir is now preparing to open his renovated bookstore, double the size of the previous one. And this is possible thanks to a major contribution from Sheikh Abodur bin Sultan Al-Qasimi, who's the president of the International Publishers Association, who dedicated the sales proceeds of her latest book, World Book Capital, to rebuilding the bookshop. This is not the only contribution. This comes alongside a very impressive crowdfunding campaign that started right after the airstrike. And this will support Samir in rebuilding the bookstore into a three-story facility with about 250,000 books in various languages, covering science, philosophy, fiction, nonfiction, art, history, everything. Mansour said the bookstore is scheduled to open before the end of this year, and through his bookstore, that is so much more than a bookstore, he aims to also export the work of Palestinian authors, poets, and novelists into global markets. I was, again, so happy to read this, so impressed by how much support bookstores can receive from their communities, from authors, from book lovers worldwide, and this is an example of how, if we come together, we can really rebuild things and make good things happen. And on that same note, I want to tell you about a different bookstore crowdfunding campaign in a very different part of the world. Do you know where Crickhowell is? Well, it's a town and community in Wales, population 2063. And here you can find Bookish, an independent bookshop that opened its doors on the high street of Crickhowell in 2010. As bookshops tend to do, Bookish has become a huge social hub for the local community, alongside attracting people to the town from far and wide. Now this year, the landlord of the building in which Bookish is has decided to sell the building, and it gave the booksellers the first opportunity to buy it and secure the future of the bookshop. So they really wanted to do that, but unfortunately, after what has been a very hard time in retail over the past year and a half now, the bookshop owners couldn't afford it, so they decided to start a crowdfunding campaign with the goal of raising £25,000. And the result was immediate and impressive. So far, 655 people have donated, and the campaign has raised almost 22 of the £25,000 necessary. And this is yet another example of how much people love their local bookshops, and if asked to help keep them alive, they most likely will jump to the rescue. So congratulations, Bookish. I'm sure you will reach your goal very, very soon, and I hope to one day make it to Crickhowell and see. And finally, before we go to today's book review, let's talk a little bit about African writing, because it's been a really good year for books by writers with origins and heritages in the countries of Africa, and many literary prizes went to them. One of the latest one is the Booker Prize that went to Damon Galgut's The Promise. The Promise tells the story of an Afrikaner family amid the political and social upheaval that followed the end of apartheid. In June, David Diop's second novel, At Night All Blood is Black, translated from French, won the International Booker Prize. It has this visceral story inspired by the accounts of Senegalese riflemen's experiences in the First World War. And of course, last month, the Nobel Prize for Literature was awarded to Abdulrazak Gurnah, the Zanzibar-born novelist who came to Britain in 1968 following his country's revolution, and who has explored themes of displacement, dislocation over the course of 10 novels. I will put a link in the show notes to the article from The Guardian where you can read more about these and other African writers. They really do open up entire new worlds for us non-African readers. I'm currently reading a book by a brilliant Ugandan author, Jennifer Nansubuga Makumbi. It's called The First Woman, and I love it. I would definitely recommend this book as well. And with that, let's go to today's book review. Hi, Emily. Welcome to God Books. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start off with an introduction. Tell us a little bit about yourself and when you fell in love with books.
So I probably started reading. My mum helped me with my love of reading because she read to me every day since I was in, like, basically a newborn. It was just us most of the time. So we would spend our days, she would spend her days reading with me. And then I could read or recite books from basically the age of one. So I was a pretty early reader. And all through primary school, like, my favorite place in school was the library. So yeah, I've kind of always loved books, and my mom definitely helped kind of instill that love of books in me from the beginning. And then yeah, my love of books I've turned into my career. So yeah, I've always been a reader, and it's been pretty wonderful.
And so tell us a little bit about what you do now. How did you turn your love of books into your job and your career?
So when I finished high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. And I tried a few different university degrees, and I started doing research, and I was like, oh, there's a diploma of library and information studies. So I applied for that. I got in and I completed the diploma, and it was so much fun. I knew deep down that I really wanted to work in a school library. So I volunteered for a year and a half in a school library as I did my degree. And then I got my first job at a high school. And now I'm at a school that I've been at for 4 years. So I'm a high school library technician, and it's the best job. I absolutely love it. I love working with the kids. I love getting to be around books all day, every day. It's definitely what I can see myself doing for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's amazing. It's amazing when you're so in love with something like books, and then you get to work exactly in that field. So we're here today for a book review, and tell us what book you've chosen for today.
So I will be doing a review on Girl in the Walls, written by AJ Neuse.
Why did you choose this book of all the books from the school library and beyond? Why did we choose this one?
Well, this one wasn't actually from the school library. I could have done a billion of those. But this one was a book that I saw on another Bookstagrammer's post, and it sounded really interesting and nothing like I'd ever read before. So I thought I'll buy it and give it a go. And I chose it to do a review because it's just so different to anything that I've ever read before. It's very unique. It's a book that's going to stick with me for a long time, just because I'm always just thinking about it. I'm going back to it and thinking, wow, that book was just something special. So that's why I chose it today.
So tell me a little bit about the plot. Girl in the Walls. It sounds very mysterious. Is there a girl in the walls in the
yeah,
book?
Yeah, there is literally a girl in the walls. So the blurb is basically, there's a girl called Elise. She knows every inch of the house. She knows which boards will creak, and she knows where the gaps are in the walls, and she knows which parts can take her in and hide her away. It's home. It's the home her parents made for her, and home is where you stay no matter what. But then there's a boy called Eddie, and Eddie calls the same house his home. He's almost a teenager and must no longer believe in the girl he sometimes sees from the corner of his eye. He needs her to disappear. But when his brother starts to see her too, they are faced with a question: how do you get rid of someone when you're not sure they even exist?
Okay, very intriguing. So is she a ghost, or that's not what it is?
When you start the book, that's the biggest question. Like, is she real? Is she real? Is she a ghost? Because the idea of an actual child living in the walls of the house it seems a bit ridiculous. So you think, oh, she's definitely a ghost. But then you continue on and you're like, okay, maybe she's not a ghost. So I'm not going to give that away, because that's definitely like a kind of a spoiler. But yeah, that was the biggest question I had when I started reading. I was, is she actually real?
Interesting. So tell me more about the book, why you liked it, why it's so unique. It sounds a bit like a thriller, but maybe it's a bit more than that as well.
Yeah, so I've seen literary thriller kind of thrown around, or even maybe gothic thriller as well. So it's kind of a niche, very small genre. I couldn't really put it into one box, but honestly the words and the writing was just truly incredible. It was beautifully lyrical and encapsulating, and it was just truly beautiful. And it has really short chapters, so that really drew me in, because I love short chapters in a book. It's easy to get lost in the pages when you're just constantly flicking, going, okay, that chapter's ended, now I need to get to the next one. So it was really wonderful. And there, it was a book that I would say is a comfort read, despite the quite intense, suspenseful, like my stomach was in knots kind of fear that it instilled in me at some points. I would definitely consider it a comfort read, because it just had a wonderful sense of home and belonging. And I can picture myself wrapped up on the couch with a blanket and a coffee reading this book over and over again, because it made you feel like you knew where you belonged, which I think was really beautiful.
And this is the debut novel from the author, from what I read, right? It's his first novel, and he's also pretty young. So I always find these really good books by young authors who are at their first attempt really impressive. What is particular, or what was particular to you about his style of writing, or the way he builds his plot or his characters? Did you identify something very unique, very original in his writing?
I think just the storyline in general was probably the most unique part about it. And it was told from multiple points of view, so that you had Elise and Eddie. They were the girl and the boy. So the two main characters were Elise and Eddie. And these two children, they were quite young. I'm going to say maybe 9 years old. They never really fit in their world. They were never seen as normal. But they showed, or the way he wrote them, they showed so much courage and conviction in themselves, each holding their own in a world that they didn't quite understand them. And I found that extremely powerful, to read a story where the children were just portrayed in such a special way. And despite never actually interacting with each other, there was a connection between the two characters. And I think that was really quite an intense and beautiful part of the story. The fact that two characters never meet, but they have such an amazing connection, was quite breathtaking, actually. Yeah.
So what kind of mood do you think we should be in when reading this book? Or when is this book for? Is it something we can imagine reading over the holiday season with a nice cup of hot chocolate? Or, I don't know, what type of reading would this be good for?
I definitely think it would be best for, yeah, like a rainy day. You're stuck inside, kind of a bit gloomy, maybe with like a fireplace going, and yeah, a cup of hot chocolate, curled up on the couch with the rug. And yeah, I think definitely a rainy day read for sure.
Definitely one for Christmas or whatever holidays you're celebrating, maybe around this time of year.
Yeah, I think so. Especially because there's a sense of home and family. I think you really feel that around the holiday time. So I think it's definitely a good one to read around Christmas or holiday time.
Now, if we were to be a bit critical, which isn't nice to do with someone's debut novel, but was there anything in the book that, I don't know, that you weren't particularly happy with, or that you would want to say criticize? That's a strong term, but something you didn't love as much?
There wasn't a lot I could say about that was negative. Like, that's how much I loved this story. But I think maybe the ending was kind of left a bit too open. Like, there were a few characters that we didn't get to see at the end and wrap up their part of the story. The ending was beautiful, and it was very symbolic, and it did tie up a couple of storylines nicely, but there were a few loose ends that I think could have been tied up at the end, maybe with an extra chapter or two. So yeah, I think that's probably my only criticism, really.
Well, maybe he's planning a sequel and he didn't want to close all the storylines.
I don't think it ended with the possibility of a sequel, because there was the main story is when there were children, and then the ending is a time jump to when they're adults. I don't think it's open for a sequel. I mean, I'd love a sequel because it was so beautiful and amazing. But yeah, I don't think it was open for a sequel, unfortunately.
And in terms of any learnings or takeaways from it, was there something that it made you think about? As you said, you think about the book over and over again, right? It comes back to you. Is there a particular thing that you think about, a certain mood, or did it leave you with a certain thought about life in general? Any key things you took away from it?
It really made me think about, where do I see home and what is home to me? Like, if I was put in a situation like the characters were, where would be my comfort? Where would be my space that I could go to feel at home and to feel like I belong? And I think that's something that I'm constantly thinking about, and a lot of people probably think about as well. And this book definitely helped to kind of make me really think about where I truly belong and what is home. And also the characters. I know Eddie is a very unique boy, and I think there might be he's a bit different, very sensitive to sounds. He's quite introverted. And so it made me think about children that I work with who may be similar to Eddie, and how I can be around children like that and how I can help them grow as well and help them find a sense of belonging. So yeah, they're probably the two main things that I took from the book that keep me thinking about it over and over again.
And that's really beautiful, especially, yeah, the idea that some children might be more sensitive, more different than we might expect, and how to adapt to that. I think that's really nice. And it's nice that it has a practical application for you in your job.
Yeah.
And have you found an answer to that question? Where is home? Is it a physical space? Is it more connected to the people we love? Is it, I don't know, what is it?
I think, especially, you know, with COVID and things like that, like I do live on my own, so my space is my home, but home is also with the people I love most, and that's my family and my close friends. I have a very small group of close friends, and when I'm with them, I feel like I'm home because I can be my true self. I feel like I belong. And then obviously my family as well, trying to see them as much as possible, because obviously with lockdowns and COVID, it's been really difficult to get that feeling of closeness and connection. So yeah,
it's definitely a combination of these, and it seems to be a theme that has come through actually during these book reviews as well, of what has this pandemic taught us in terms of relationships and home and what's important and the small things that bring comfort. And maybe that's also why people have read more and have gotten closer to books during this time, and this could definitely be a book to hopefully wrap up the pandemic season and start Christmas season. Well, thank you so much, Emily. Is there anything else you'd like to add about this book or any other book maybe that you're reading at the moment that you want to tell us about?
Only that I hope that everyone will go out and buy this book and read it. It's definitely up there and probably my top 5 books of the year. I can't narrow it further than I already have, but it's definitely in my top 5. Yeah, and I'm currently not reading anything at the moment. I'm waiting for Kingdom of the Cursed to arrive in the mail, because I've just finished Kingdom of the Wicked and I loved it. So I'm waiting for the sequel. I can't get out of that headspace yet. So I need to finish the series.
Okay, well, maybe you'll come back in a few weeks or a month's time and tell us about that one as well.
Yeah, definitely love to.
Thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to God Books. Join me next week for a very, very special episode with a few booksellers we know and love. I promise it'll be a good one. Until then, sit back, relax, and enjoy a good book.